Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the 22nd of March 2024. That means it's Friday, glorious, delicious, wonderful, smelly, sweaty, stinky Friday. God, I'm glad you're here. I'm Derek Hunter, I'm your host. Appreciate you as always. Super appreciate the people who go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Support the show, get the weekend effort and review and all that other stuff. Enter the contest. We're giving away a signed copy of Donald Trump Jr.'s book, Liberal Privilege, on Tuesday. So make sure you get your entries in by Monday, probably noonish. And yeah, support the program, if you please, please, please. Thank you, and let's get started so we can get the weekend going. So, of course, there's a lot going on. There's a whole bunch of things happening. We had the big hearing up on Capitol Hill that we're going to get to start off. Morning Joe is very upset at Donald Trump for existing, really. I swear to God, every single day these people are like, oh, my God, can you believe what Donald Trump said? Can you believe what Donald Trump did? Nobody's sitting there going, you know what? I'm really happy and pleased and proud of what Joe Biden did, said, or thought, or advanced, or whatever. They're just pretending that the guy was, he's the president who wasn't even in town that month. Hey, we got to do something. Can you make a case for Joe Biden? Sure, I can. Donald Trump is a monster. He's a fascist. He's a this. He's a that. He's the other thing. Well, that's a hell of a case for. I want to know if you can make a case for somebody. Did you not hear that Donald Trump is history's greatest monster? Corrupt as the day is long. Okay, what did he do? Nothing. Stuff. Things. He used his power to enrich himself. Really, how? By doing stuff? I love how the left, they sit there and they look at Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden bragged for years. It was a lie. Or an exaggeration, but he bragged for years while he was in the United States Senate. I'm the poorest member of the United States Senate. I'm the poorest member of the United States. I think he was mispronouncing the word dumb, but nobody wanted to tell him. But I'm the poorest member of the Congress. I'm the poorest this. I'm the poorest. They call me middle class Joe. They call me lunch bucket Joe. Nobody ever called him any of those things except for him. You will not find anybody except in a mocking way. After, you know, referencing him calling himself those things. You'll never find anybody calling himself those things. Never happened. Just like he says, I was raised basically in the Puerto Rican community. Yeah, right. Lily White, Delaware with your racist family. They totally rolled with the Puerto Ricans. Or I was raised in the synagogue. Uh-huh. You're as Jewish as you are Catholic. Now, aren't you late to perform that abortion, Joe? But, of course, he just lies. And lies and lies and lies. But he was always talking about how poor he was. And now he's filthy rich. Absolutely filthy rich. Not all of that money came in, by the way. For example, he didn't buy the DuPont estate. And DuPont, meaning, yeah, the big DuPont estate, after he retired. He bought that while he was still a United States Senator. How could he afford that? And it's just one of those mysteries for the ages, I guess. You know, boy, Joe Biden is very, very good. He can squeeze a penny so hard he can turn it into a dollar. It's a miracle. It's a little bit of a miracle. But he bragged about how poor he was, and now he's filthy rich. And Democrats go, there's no problem there. Got rich doing public service. Do you have any evidence of a crime? Do you have any evidence of a crime? Donald Trump was rich, went into public service, and became, he's still rich, but a net worth of a lot less. And you go, that's corruption. It's wildly corrupt. It's like going into a casino and losing, and somebody accusing you of corruption. You cheated. I lost everything. You cheated. You know you. Did I cheat to lose everything? Is this some sort of weird Brewster's Millions situation? What do you mean I cheated? But that's the way that they roll, these leftists. So you had this hearing up on Capitol Hill about the Biden family corruption. Just a quick question. I've asked it before, but it bears repeating. For anybody new who's listening, how many LLCs do you and your family have? Do you know the matriarch and the patriarch of your family? They have like 5, 6 of them. And you and your spouse have a couple, maybe half dozen. The kids, of course, all have their own, maybe just one or two. They're young. They're starting out. But everybody has an LLC, right? I mean, no. I could have sworn that's the way it operated. Biden grandchildren have LLCs, limited liability corporations. Now, normally somebody starts an LLC because of a crazy reason, you know, like they have a business. They sell a good or provide a service or something crazy like that, you know, just spitballing here. But there isn't a single member of the Biden family who does any of those things. They don't provide any services. They don't produce any goods. They don't sell any goods. I don't even know if they have an eBay store, to be honest with you. But I guess now Hunter sells his artwork. It's artwork. Can you envision a scenario where you need an LLC, multiple LLC, if you don't have a business? If you don't have a secondary bit of income coming in as an independent contractor or anything? And yet the Biden family has at least 24 of them. 24 of them. Again, no eBay store, no discernible reason for their existence. I didn't see any clips in the hearing where somebody said, I guess because Hunter wasn't there. But what do you need all these LLCs? Why do you need 5 LLCs? None of which do anything, right? Most people have one car. Because, you know, they need to get around. Sometimes you have a second car because you might, I don't know, you got a good deal on it, or it's an older car, but it's your backup car just in case or whatever. Most people don't have 60 cars. Most people don't have 12 cars. What you need 12 cars for? The one or two cars will get you around. Now, maybe you're filthy rich and you just collect them, but I'm not using cars as cars here. It's a metaphor. I'm talking about most people. I'm talking about normal people. Okay, if you're Jay Leno, you got 200 cars because you got the money to do it. But LLCs are a little bit different than cars. They're supposed to be for a business. They have weird business-sounding names that, you know, would not in any way, shape, or form indicate that they are even remotely associated with a member of the Biden family. That's what's weird. It's like the Orange Offshore Holding Company. What is that? I don't know. What do they do? They sell oranges? They don't do anything. It's just a bank account in the Cayman Islands. And Democrats look at that and go, it's perfectly normal. I don't see what the problem is. What are you going to do? If you're getting money from overseas, how many you need to, it can't fly that far. It can only, well, it's an electronic transfer. You'd have to explain to someone like AOC that's how it works. They don't actually physically fly. They don't throw the money toward it. Yeah, it's electronically transferred. It can be anywhere in the world in a matter of moments. But she'll still sit there and scratch her head and go, I don't get it. Why are you a racist? In fact, they all will. But they don't see a problem. They don't see a crime. Guy gets rich while doing public service. Perfectly normal to them. Because, I mean, they're all trading stocks, AOC. I'm a poor bartender. Now, where's my $60,000 Tesla? Now, I have a condo or apartment or whatever the hell it is in the building over by the stadiums in Washington, D.C. My building has a Whole Foods in the basement. Right there, yeah, everybody poor, everybody who's in touch with the common man shops at Whole Foods, everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. Used to go to, there isn't a Whole Foods anywhere near me now, but I used to go to Whole Foods when I was broke and just look at the meat counter. They had the nice glass display thing, like, my God, that's delicious meat. And then you look at the price and you're like, that's easily 3 times what it costs at a real grocery store. But I'd look, and then I'd buy like a cup of chili. Good chili, just saying. But she has changed. she has been. If anybody has gone to DC and became of DC faster, I don't know who that person is than AOC. And yesterday she was talking about Tony Bobulinski. Tony Bobulinski, the former business partner of the Biden family, who pointed out to the world in an interview with Tucker Carlson 2 years ago, but the world didn't care, the media didn't care, and the FBI didn't care, they just didn't care, that they were selling Joe Biden, or selling access to Joe Biden, they were selling the existence of Joe Biden, that was the product. Hunter brought nothing else to the table other than I can get my dad on the phone. And all these foreign governments just said, well, here's money. All these foreign companies said, here's some money. You sit there and you go, and it's been a while since I've said this, I guess, so it's worth repeating. Because you'll sit there and you go, why would China, for example, give Hunter Biden $1 billion to invest as a hedge fund? He doesn't have any experience in that. Why would they risk $1 billion? Well, you got to remember, he gets commission on that. Or maybe it was $100 million, whatever it was. He gets commission on that. He gets millions of dollars. It's a way they can't just give, they're not just going to give him money. They want to be in business with him so that they can get their talons into him, into the family. But you risk $100 million or $1 billion because to an individual, most individuals anyway, that's a lot of money. To a government like China, it's not. It's not. They have the world's second largest economy. They're encroaching on us if we keep electing morons who cause our economy to sputter. They'll catch us. Now, per capita, we'll still beat them because we've got maybe, I don't know, one-fifth the population. But they have a giant economy in the grand scheme of things. $1 billion is next to nothing. So if you take $10 billion, still not a whole lot to China, and you go, all right, take this $10 billion and spread it around all the potential presidential candidates' kids. Not this year, in 4 years or in 8 years. Spread it around. Let's get a relation. Let's build a relationship with these people. And remember, they didn't give Hunter Biden $1 billion to just, here you go, go crazy. It's $1 billion. It's yours. No strings attached. It's China. It's not Mr. Beast. He'd be dead, by the way. He would give me all the cocaine in the world, and he would have been dead. It was to invest. He got a commission. So realistically, China could get the lion's share of their money back and maybe even make some money on some of the investments. But it's just the $1 billion outlay that, you know, catches the attention, that gets the juices flowing. It's the $3 million that Hunter gets from that deal as a commission that seems a little bit weird, right? That you question, you're paying this guy $3 million. And I'd take that deal. Is your dad potentially going to run for president in a couple of years? And you sit there and you go, that's a huge risk. Again, it's not just Hunter. I promise you. If we had an honest media and we had strategically smart Republicans, which I can't help but chuckle when I say that, you could look into the field of Democrats in 2020, look at what their family members do. I bet a lot of them are registered lobbyists. Maybe even some of them have registered as foreign agents or representatives for foreign governments, whatever. And just take a look at the client list. I promise you, China didn't just go, you know what, I'm going to put all my chips on black. I'm going to put all my money on Hunter Biden. They hedged their bets. They spread it around. They didn't have to buy Bernie. Bernie's, you know, a fellow comrade. But the other people, they had to probably try to influence. So it's a kid. It's a spouse in the firm that the spouse works for. It's a brother or a sister or an uncle or somebody. That's how it works. They throw the money around. And maybe it doesn't pay off in the immediate term. You throw money at somebody in 2020 and you go, they didn't run. But maybe they're going to run in 2028. We're already in with them, and it costs you pocket change, relatively speaking, to have this potential influence. And let's face it, they don't have to be in the White House to have influence. The people who run for president are generally members of Congress, either in the House or the Senate, or governors. So if you're already able to get something from the tree you planted, not the big money, but something. So you keep doing it, because when you do get somebody in the White House or in a cabinet post or in a position where you can really exploit them, you hit pay dirt. You hit the lottery. You're cheating. You're waiting the balls, but you hit the lottery. So as Tony Bobulinski was up there testifying, and the Democrats had no interest whatsoever, it wasn't in president at the time, it wasn't this, it was, yeah, they play the long con. They know what they're doing. China is evil, not stupid. Democrats are evil, not stupid, although some of them are pretty stupid, let's be honest. And starting with stupid, let us go to AOC. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You got to love this when these people start being indignant. Tell me what the crime. Tell me what the crime. Show me the video of Joe Biden murdering the hooker and burying the body with his son, or otherwise there's nothing here, nothing here, nothing here. Show me the video. Show me the crime of Donald Trump. What crime did he do? He inflated the value of his real estate. Really? You think Mar-a-Lago's worth $18 million? That's it? There's an empty lot less than a mile away that's selling for $2 million, and it's smaller than that. So you're going to tell me that Mar-a-Lago is worth $18 million because some D-bag judge in New York says so. All right, and you're going to base your whole existence on that. That's what you got. Okay, Joe Biden is worth $24 million. What does anybody in his family do? You don't know. You can't prove that. You can't prove anything about Donald Trump. It doesn't stop you from calling him everything short of a murderer. So AOC is demanding answers from Tony Bobulinski. Did you witness a crime? Tell me the crime you witnessed. Prove it, prove it, prove it. Gimme, gimme, gimme. She was hoping for a nice viral moment, but she did. She got a nice viral moment. It's probably not the virus that she was hoping for, because it turns out she's the virus. And she, again, is that perfect combination of arrogance and ignorance.
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir? Specifically.
You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question. No. RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is the
It's a category
crime?
Of crimes that you're then charged
You
under
have charges.
A long hundred
You have charges. Statutes. Sir, yeah. Please
you want me to
name
the exact statute
sir,
under RICO?
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18
All right, sir, I reclaim my
lawyers
time.
That went to law school.
I reclaim my time is what Democrats screech and scream every time they know that they've just made an ass of them. So they're in the middle of a field of rakes, and they just keep stepping on rake after rake after rake and whacking them right in the face. Reclaiming my time. It is my time. You asked a question. I didn't want an answer. RICO is not a crime. I grew up with RICO in Westchester. We went to school together. RICO is not a crime. He's a person. Yeah, I mean, that's the level of what we're dealing with here. Donald Trump is charged in a RICO case down in Georgia. He's going to get thrown out, but this is the level of intelligence that we're dealing with when it comes to Democrats. Give me this mistake. Farah, he said, she ignored that one, the Foreign Agent Registration Act. Yeah, that is genuinely one other thing. I mean, you can sit there, you can argue about RICO and the racketeering and everything, but failing to register as a foreign agent, there's literally no doubt that Hunter Biden is guilty of that, right? at least should be charged with it. He's taking a ton of money from overseas in industries he has no idea about, from countries he's never visited, that speak languages he doesn't know. Like, he's nothing. You might as well send a bag of sand to represent him and the meetings there, because he can't listen to anybody, he can't communicate with anybody, he doesn't know anything, and any way he votes is just going to be stupid. So, and just go, here's a bag of sand, here's some oatmeal, here's some sand, and we'll just pretend he's there and he'll go with everybody else. But he's representing them. He's not representing them. He wasn't lobbying. Yeah, no, he never talked to his dad about his businesses, except for all the times he talked to his dad about his businesses, except for all the times his dad came to his business dinners, except for all the time he called his dad from his business dinners. Other than that, never, never once. It's like Jeffrey Dahmer going, I never killed anybody. I mean, except if you're gonna count everybody that I killed, though, I guess, sure. But if you don't count the people I killed, or putting aside the people I killed, I never killed anybody. It's almost too stupid to believe, but we have it on video. We saw it live on television that these people. Donald Trump is the most corrupt president ever. Really? Why did Joe Biden's family get millions from overseas? Donald Trump got money from overseas. Saudis stayed in his hotel. Oh, yeah. $800 a night. That's totally going to buy a billionaire. And oh, by the way, every dollar that the hotel took in from foreign governments and employees of foreign governments, they donated to charity. Did Joe Biden donate anything to charity? No. No, he didn't. He bought a mansion on the beach. There's a difference, right? Just a subtle difference. Okay, so while you've got AOC going, reclaiming my time, reclaiming my time, reclaiming my time, I reclaim my time. What is it about these leftists who... I could have played, there's this woman out of, where the hell is she? She's out of Texas. She just kept talking. And then she'd sort of accuse Bobby Linsky of something. And he'd go, is that a question? Nope, it's not a question. This is my time. This is still my time. Nobody wants your time. Nobody wants anything to do with you. You're insufferable. Like, and you sit there, and I looked it up in her district. She won with, I think it was like 70. It's a 72. It's a Democrat plus 72 district. And you sit there and you go, what is, okay, I get it. There's not going to be a Republican going to challenge this district in, I think it was Houston. It's just not going to happen. But what were the other Democrats like? Were they literally corpses? Did they smell? Did they just come out? And were they Don Rickles? Was it somebody just spewing racial slurs? She happens to be a woman of color. Was it somebody just spewing racial slurs? Not really sure if I want to go for the idiot or the other person. All right, I'll go for the idiot. Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett. She spent more time on her hair and her outfit. Oh, this is horribly sexist, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. She spent more time on her hair and outfit than she did reading the script that her staff put together for her. Now, how can you say that? Are you racist? No. She spends most of her time looking down, looking at papers, reading what she's saying. And at no point does she come across a question mark or pause for witness to try to start to answer. It was just doing her job. She knows what it is. She is one of those. Everybody knows these members. You can spot them a mile away. They show up. They know exactly. See, it's every 5 minutes. It's a Republican, it's a Democrat, it's a Republican, it's a Democrat, and it goes in order. You know the order in which you are supposed to go. So if a hearing starts at 10 a.m., which they either start at 10 or 2, if the hearing starts at 10 a.m. and you're the 20th member on a 40-member committee, you just look at the time every 5 minutes. What time do I have to be there? I don't know, 11:50. My time slot is 11:50. They arrive at the reading room, at the hearing room at 11:48, maybe, if I'm being generous and they feel like being early. They sit down. They put their papers out. They get everything ready. for C-SPAN doesn't show their empty seat, even though with them sitting in it, it's kind of an empty seat. But they don't show their empty seat. And then it goes, the chair recognizes Ms. Crockett from Texas. And you cut to her and you think, oh, she's been there for a while. She knows what's going on. No. If you watch a hearing, Republican or Democrat, you will see 90% of the members ask the same questions. Literally the same question. It's just like, same question, same question. Been answered 15 times. I would love to see a witness kind of go, well, if you'd have been here, you'd have heard me answer that the first 12 times it was asked. But fine, I'll tell you again. Like, you're not to give me an attitude. Like, no, you don't do your job. All right? You don't do your job. There are no floor votes going on. Your job is to be at this hearing, and you're not here. So that tells me that you're off having meetings with lobbyists, probably, or getting your hair done. But nobody wants to do that, because if you're mean to a Democrat, they can hold you in contempt of Congress. You can commit perjury. You can refuse to testify. You can refuse to show up. Ignore a subpoena if you're a Democrat. It's no big deal. But if you're a Republican, it's contempt of Congress, and the Justice Department already has your execution planned. So, you know, it's just, you know, the American dream. It's the American way. It's how Democrats operate. But this woman shows up and just goes, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing, and you don't know, and hit the blah, 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 blah. And she's just accusing Tony Bobulinski of everything under the sun. You're terrible, and you're lying, and you're this, and you're that, and you're the other thing. And he's like, is that, can I get a chance to answer, respond? Nope, it's my time. It's my time. I reclaim my time. Just somebody you kind of want to see, like, break a heel as they're walking or turn an ankle. Because it's just like, God, where is instant karma when you need it? But Tony Bobulinski, it's kind of funny because Tony turned the tables on these idiot members of Congress, in particular, Jamie Raskin. Congressman Jamie Raskin from Montgomery County. I managed to escape his district in a hot air balloon. He spends all of his day seemingly squirting Jerry Curl into his... There's something about Jamie Raskin. He always looks like he just got out of the shower, doesn't he? His hair is always wet. And you're like, what the hell are you putting in your hair? Or are you literally just getting out of the shower all the time? Is there somebody... You know, James Brown had the guy that when he went down on one knee, the guy would come out and put the cape on him, right? Does Jamie Raskin have somebody that the second he goes down on one knee, somebody comes out and puts a little spritzer on his hair? Is that what's going on? I don't know what the hell's going on, but why does your hair always look wet? And why does it look like it's covered? I get it. You were bald for a while because you had treatment for cancer. I don't care. You know, I'll show you as much sympathy as you show reliance in the truth. But you got your hair back. And now you look like Count Chocula or something. I don't know what the hell. I've never seen a more defined forehead hairline in my life outside of a cartoon. Which looks like the old, when I was a kid and I was in college and high school, the late night commercials were all Ron Popeil. They were all Ronco. It was long after the Pocket Fisherman. But the rotisserie, remember the Showtime rotisserie thing? I have one of those. I have two of those, actually, a big one and a small one. They're awesome. They work great. I bought the big one for like $25 at a Goodwill. It's like, this is a bargain. And I had another one that I had for about 10 years till it broke. And then I had to scramble to find another. Highly recommend it. All the other stuff, probably not so much. One of the things I seem to remember him pushing when he was alive was this hair in a can kind of thing. It wasn't spray on. It was more like, it kind of looked like the shavings from a pencil sharpener, and you'd sprinkle them on your hair. Damned if it didn't look like hair. You know, if you had a bald spot, you could cover it up. I assume you don't want anybody touching it, and I'd have to imagine you lived in absolute fear, terror of rain. But if you did not get rained on or nobody touched you, it could look like hair. It was on TV, But still, I think it was before high def TV. So what are you going to do? I actually have a friend who used to use that stuff. Not that stuff in particular, but whatever the modern equivalent is. He used it like a couple years ago when he would do Fox hits. And I guess, if you don't look very closely, it can look kind of real. Although, remember when Rudy Giuliani was sweating in that one press conference and all that little like black soot sweat things were going down his face? And you're like, what is going on there? I think that's might have been what it was. Rudy, we know you're bald. We've come to terms with it. It's time for you to – everybody out there using this stuff. We got it. We know. We don't judge. We don't care. You need to get comfortable with it. And Jamie Raskin, I don't know, maybe his hair didn't grow back in the way he liked or whatever, but he did something to his head. That's neither here nor there. I just – wanted to point it out because, Jamie, I want you to know that we're here for you. We're here for you. Mostly to mock you, but still, that's a form of being here for you. It's certainly not out of, you know, sincere concern. We definitely do not care in that sense at all. But we're here for you. You look like Count Chocula, dude, and it's just not. It's distracting. Normally, your douchebaggery is like enough that it's like looking at an eclipse. You have to kind of look away. You can only get a sense of it real quick. But that hair overrode your douchebaggery. So, I don't know. I'd assume it's so bad that that was the point. Wouldn't you have to assume that that's so bad? Like, there's never anybody who's like, he's a really nice guy with a god-awful, terrible hairpiece. It's always the jerk in the office who has a horrible hairpiece. And you're like, well, maybe he's distracting from the fact that he's a jerk. Maybe that's what Jamie Raskin was doing. It's neither here nor there. Call me, Jamie. Well, I got a lot of hair. I got long hair right now. I'll cut off a little bit and I'll give it to you. We'll tape it to the top of your head. It's okay. A little bit of Elmer's glue and some determination. And we can turn you just back into a douchebag and not just a douchebag with bad hair. You know, I care. I'm a giver. Anyway, Jamie Raskin got wildly upset because Tony Bobulinski pointed out that he's a liar. Now, he only did this because Jamie Raskin spends pretty much all of his time over at MSNBC lying, right? His congressional career appears to be one long performance art piece that is part of an audition for MSNBC, should Rachel Maddow ever, I don't know, accidentally utter something true or coherent, then they go, we got to get rid of her. We got to put somebody else in there. Who can we get to spew this garbage shamelessly as Rachel Maddow? I'm like, oh, you know what? Jamie Raskin. I don't know what's going on with his hair, but we can get an old Beetle wig, put the bowl cut right on her. You probably wouldn't even be able to notice the difference between him and Rachel Maddow. Actually, the show would probably be a little bit more feminine. So let's do it. Anyway, he got upset and interrupted an opening statement. Now, you're not supposed to interrupt opening statements. You're not supposed to interrupt other members. They always do this. Excuse me, point of order, point of order, point of clarification. They want to throw everybody off. They want to assert their... This is the only time in their lives that they aren't picked last or picked on, most of these people in both parties. Up there aren't too many people where you're like, you know, if you're playing a game of pickup baseball, I'm looking at that committee right there. There's like seven good. I could field a pretty good team out of it. No, that never happens. Never in a million years happens. It'd be like the people who put the glove on the wrong hand. And throw like they're the wrong hand. Like nobody ever told you were left-handed? Really? Your whole life? Nobody ever told you were left-handed? Because you, okay, now throw it with your left hand. Okay, maybe you're not left-handed. You're just not, you're no-handed. All right, you're going to hurt yourself. Why don't you go wait in the car? Like that's kind of thing. It's the kind of guy where the third baseman moves in so close when they're up that they almost could get hit by the bat. Like, that's the kind of level of athleticism you're dealing with up there. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just love making fun of these people, mostly because I hold them in contempt. But I also, no, it's because I hold them in contempt. Anyway, you're not supposed to interrupt These people, there are rules, there are protocols. They always love the rules, but they always interrupt. And Raskin jumps in on Bobby Linsky because he and Dan Goldman, who is another liar, Dan Goldman is dumb. Jamie Raskin is evil. There's a difference. Dan Goldman comes from the Levi Strauss family. He's one of those people who's got more money than God. He's inherited family wealth. Family's worth billions. And he's got nothing better to do. And his family can't like him very much. Because if your family liked you, would your family go, you know what you should do? I really enjoy spending time with you. You should get a job that takes you away from us for a lot of time. And yeah, you should, and you got to do a lot of go ahead. I don't want to travel the world. I don't want to be around. I'm going to travel the world, actually. I just don't want to be around you. So you go to Washington. You play make-believe. You have no power in the house. You don't wear the pants in the family. You don't even wear the skirt in the family. You're the gimp of the family. And we will we'll spend the family's money on ourselves. That's what I have to imagine Dan Goldman's home life is like, because I couldn't imagine being around him. Imagine if you're his wife and he tries to teach the kids something and you just got to constantly follow him up and say, all right, let me tell you what it really is. Your dad is wrong. Anyway, listen to Jamie Raskin get very upset about being called a liar because liars hate being called liars.
Yet the same people preaching this mantra know better. They continue to lie directly to the American people without hesitation and remorse. Rep Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies. Hunter Biden's defense attorney, Abby Lowell, weaponizes letters to Congress to try to smear my name.
Mr. And Chairman. Misstate
the cold hard facts.
Mr. Chairman.
In an attempt to save his powerfully connected client and his father. I challenge Mr. Lowell to make those claims on national television so he can be held accountable for his lies. Prior to my successful business career, I was an officer in the United States Navy. At Navy's elite Naval Nuclear Power Training Command, I later served as the command's chief technology officer.
Please proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the.
Okay. Am I supposed to say it's my time, Mr. Raskin?
Yeah. But please, Mr. Bobulinski, please.
Okay.
Come to order. Mr. Bobulinski, please proceed.
Okay.
Please proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the minority.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, save his time, but he called members of this committee liars, and I just want to know whether the order and decorum requirements of House Rule 11 apply to witnesses appearing before the committee. Does it apply or does it not?
Should I address? I don't.
There's decorum from the members. We've asked for that. There's no language that I'm aware of pertaining to a witness.
Yeah. Thank you.
So don't make sure we didn't waste any of his time on the opening.
Are they allowed to call us liars? Are you allowed to lie? Shouldn't that be, the outrage is, why are you lying? Not somebody calling. He's calling me a liar. Why are you lying? If you're offended by the fact that somebody's calling you a liar, Jamie, my suggestion would be to stop lying. That's just me. Okay, so we're done we're not done mocking Democrats. Jamie Raskin, though, seriously, do something about that hair, dude. Just come to terms with it. You're not attractive. You can't polish that turd. The only way you're going to look good involving hair is if you go with a full cousin it and you get like a 5-foot-long wig and it hangs over your face. And it doesn't look wet all the time. I'm just reminded of that scene in Coming to America where the activator, the Jerry Curl family, is sitting on the couch and they all get up and they got the head stains from all the stuff they've been spraying in their hair. I know it's horrible, but it's true. And you can't tell. Maybe you didn't think that before when you looked at Jamie Raskin. But now you'll never not be able to. You're welcome, America. There was another hearing up there on Capitol Hill yesterday, and it involved judicial nominees. There's a whole bunch of judicial nominees trying to get appointed to the federal bench or to get promoted from the lower courts to higher courts. This story from Reuters, the headline, Senate Republicans grill Seventh Circuit nominee on her trial court backlog. This is Nancy Maldonado. Says President Joe Biden's newest nominee to the Chicago-based Seventh U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals defended her record on Wednesday as Senate Republicans grilled her on how she has amassed one of the largest case backlogs of any federal trial court judge nationally. You know, somebody, I can't help but notice you're wildly inefficient at your job. I want to promote you. Only in Democrat circles. I don't know. She's a woman. She's young-ish looking. Maybe she's a member of various groups. Who knows? Republicans, during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, cited data showing that U.S. District Judge Nancy Maldonado ranked seventh highest nationally among district court judges with civil motions pending without a ruling for over 6 months. Why such a backlog? Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, the panel's ranking Republican, asked. Now, it's kind of funny. This is the, they grill her. They're grilling her. Why are you grilling her? Grilling has a connotation to it. It's not super friendly. They ask, now, can anybody really imagine Lindsey Graham, like, leaning over, just in his shirt sleeves, tie loosened, but dangling onto the table, leaning over, why do you have so many of it? No. Wouldn't you want to know? Hey, you're going to promote this person. How are they at their current job? They're not super good at their current. They kind of take their sweet-ass time. Maybe we would want to know why it is that you're number seven out of the thousands of federal judges out there. Her 125 motions pending were detailed in a semi-annual report of the Judiciary Procedures pursuant to the Civil Justice Reform Act that details the extent to which federal judges have not ruled on long-pending motions in civil cases. Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana said that the data revealed Maldonado had a, quote, abysmal record of case backlogs, the worst of any district court judge within the Seventh Circuit, which encompasses Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. Quote, you really think of all the other district judges in the Seventh Circuit, you're the one that ought to be promoted based on that record, he asked. Now, we're halfway through that story. What we haven't heard is an answer. Isn't that weird? So those damned Republicans, they're badgering this poor, sweet, nourishing woman who never did nothing to nobody. Maldonado, who, if confirmed, would be the first Hispanic to sit on the Seventh Circuit. There you go. There's your answer. There it is. She'll be the first Hispanic to sit on the Seventh. How many people have to do? I've always said this, and I'll say it again. I wish three of every configuration of human being would just get everything done. All right? Just get it done. So we never have to hear about this crap again. Because her being Hispanic is about as relevant as her shoe size. But that's the selling point, and I promise you, with Joe Biden, that's why she got the nomination. Find me a liberal. She's already on the bench. All right. She kind of, I don't know if she's good or bad at her job, but she's not super efficient at it. Doesn't matter. You said she was Hispanic, right? Yeah, that's it. I'm trying to pander. Yesterday, Joe Biden was out in Arizona. He went to a Mexican restaurant to pander to Hispanic voters. Swear to God, you couldn't. You can't make this up. I want to reach out to Hispanic voters. Let's go hang out in a Taco Bell parking lot. Why don't just go to a lowrider convention or something, all right? Why don't you go tailgate at a Santana concert? Do something a little bit more stereotypical or offensive, old white dude. And he's out there and he's going, hey, you know, I love the Hispanics. My wife loves breakfast tacos, which don't exist. My wife loves, remember when she said si se puede? God, just, it's dumb and dumber. It really is. One day he goes, Joe dumber, or is, well, Joe's senile. So he's got that kind of excuse built in, but he's always been dumb. Jill has always been dumb, too. Takes basically what is an honorary degree and demands to be called doctor all the time. You want to talk about insecurity and probably daddy issues. Let's talk about Jill. That's, again, for another story, another time. But he's out there trying to reach Hispanic voters. But here's the dirty little secret, because they're in a Mexican restaurant that has to be, it's either the least popular Mexican restaurant in the world, if you saw the video of it, or more likely, and this is actually what happened, I know this is what happened, the advance team for the campaign screened everybody who was in there. They handpicked, they didn't go to the Mexican restaurant and say, hey, you're in the Mexican restaurant, the president's coming. It was, they reached out to the local Democratic club, said, give us lists of Hispanic members who would like to meet the president, who we could get to show up at this Mexican restaurant that they probably never went to before, if we're being honest. And we're going to have them, we're going to make sure that they're on board with it. They got to be really loyal Democrats, so probably everybody in that room is a volunteer or an employee of the state party. And they're going to sit there and listen to Joe Biden talk. They're going to have to get there 4 hours early. They're going to have to stay in there. Joe will come in. He'll talk for 5 to 10 minutes. We'll get some pictures. We'll get the camera angles for the video, for the commercials. And then we're going to get the hell out of there. Make sure that everybody knows that they can't ask any questions. And make sure that everybody there, they can hate Israel all they want, but they can't have participated in an anti-Semitic protest or pro-Hamas rally or march. Why? That's what the vetting process is for. Why? Because they want to avoid anybody standing up. This is why Joe Biden does so few events that are open to the public, just the general public. They don't want people standing up going, you're a genocide, Joe, you're committing genocide, you're doing it. They want to avoid that. They've literally started vetting members of audiences for Joe Biden rallies. You show up to a Trump event, you get wanded, you go through security, you're in. You can scream and yell and protest and all you want. You'll get tossed out like you should, but you can get in there. The Biden campaign is terrified, not that conservatives are going to go in there and start screaming things about the border or talking about Lake and Riley or talking about any of the people who were murdered by illegal aliens or whatever. None of that. Although they should. Quite frankly, Turning Point USA should be doing that. I don't know what they exist to do except for hold events if they're not going to do that. But they're not terrified of that because conservatives, frankly, don't do that. They're not smart enough to do that. It is the left, their own flank, that they're terrified of. Joe has moved so far left to try and placate these people, but he can't go all the way, because to go all the way to appease these people would be to appeal to Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, which would be to denounce Israel. And there's a delicate balance where you can be as critical as you want of Israel, but you can't. You can't take the side of Hamas. You can't. It's different. Yes, the progressive Jews who donate to the Democratic Party are still going to, they're progressives first. And so many of them don't like Israel. Especially, it's amazing when Joe Biden says during the State of the Union address, you can't love the country only when your side is in charge. And that's exactly what Democrats do. But they also only love Israel when there's a liberal in charge. When there's Netanyahu in charge, they hate Israel. They don't like Israel. They can't come out and say it, but they'll call for a new election, for example, while saying, nobody better interfere in our elections. By the way, Jews, hold another election and get rid of that one you got now. We don't like him. So they're absolutely living in fear of somebody coming out and saying, you genocide Joe, because there is no, there's no answer that wins Joe Biden or Democrats votes or raises money to that thing. You're genocide Joe. It appeases no one. It pleases no one. That's sort of the self-destructive suicide bomber kind of nature of the progressive left. Is, you know, I guess in a way you look at it and you go, well, they're really true believers. They're not really true believers, though, because they're more like, they're more like a Manchurian candidate. They don't, they they can't defend, they can't explain, they can't rationalize. You talk to most people at an anti-Israel thing, you know, what does the river to the sea mean? Well, that just means that I believe in a two-state solution. Really? You're two. Where's the second state go? If you go from the river to the sea, you wipe out Israel. Where does Israel go then? I don't know. I wasn't a geography major. Now, of course, they'd all become an atlas if somebody said from the river to the sea, Israel shall be free. Now, genocide, they're calling for genocide. But it's different when they do it because they don't think about it. They repeat. They don't rationalize. There's a big, big difference. That's how you can end up. Remember when they were with Occupy Wall Street? Those mutants out there camping in the park, and they have their confessions about, oh, I once engaged in capitalism, and then they would, instead of applauding, because that could be triggering and too loud for people with dog ears or something, they did the snaps and the up twinkles. Remember the up twinkles? Because some people are deaf and couldn't hear snaps or claps, they did their fingers pointing up and wiggled them around, and those were called up twinkles. That was the same. It was showing support. Down twinkles was the equivalent of booing. And you're sitting there and goes, who has this kind of time on their hands to think of this crap? These are leftists. These are trust fund brats who have nothing better to do. They've never found meaning in their lives. They've never had a meaningful relationship. They're unloved by their parents and, quite frankly, unlovable as human beings. So they have nothing else to do except lord over other people and tell them how they must live and camp out in Zuccotti Park or whatever. It's that kind of world that they've created. So it makes sense that Joe Biden would nominate the first Hispanic to sit on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. She's already a federal judge. Why isn't it enough that she's Hispanic and she's a federal judge? Well, no, it's different. It's different now. Well, we've got a wise Latina on the Supreme Court. Next nominee going to be another Hispanic, or are they going to have a transgender nominee or whatever? Is it going to be a first or a second or a third? I just want three of every configuration to do everything so we can get past this crap. He was the first African-American to pilot the space shuttle. Cool. I'm a white guy. I'm never going to fly on the space shuttle, let alone pilot it. The fact that he piloted it, he's got me beat. His skin color has nothing to do with it. It kind of cheapens the accomplishment, if you ask me. The accomplishment is you flew the space shuttle. I'll never do that. But no, even a black guy could fly the space shuttle. And you sit there and you go, doesn't that seem a little bit condescending, a little bit racist? Of course a black guy can fly the space shuttle. But that guy flew the space shuttle. It doesn't matter. Not like the people in Mission Control were sitting there going, okay, give the black guy the stick. He's going to try and pilot the space shuttle. Bang on there. Everybody, hold on. We're letting a black guy take over. Oh, he did it. He didn't smash it into a mountain or a satellite or whatever. Like, no. He's a trained professional. To separate him out by his skin color is to say, well, I don't know if he can do it. He did do it. Phew, bullet dodged. Let's not get another black guy up there for a while. But, you know, that was pretty exhilarating. When a white guy's driving the space shuttle, they go, we got this. I'm going to go to lunch. Just hit the autopilot button, and we'll be fine. I'm going to ignore this. All the mission control's going on vacation today. No, they don't care what color the driver is. Only politicians do. Well, politicians and racists. So you can see why Reuters would be reporting. She'd be the first Hispanic to sit on the Seventh Circuit. She said she told senators that when she joined the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois in August, she was immediately assigned about 300 cases with pending motions. Wait, so she's been on a job since August of 2022, and she's already up for a promotion while being one of the slowest judges in all of the country? Well, that just reinforces the idea that she's only getting the promotion because her ethnicity. The COVID-19 pandemic, which prompted courts to delay in-person trials during the public health emergency, had contributed to a backlog of her cases. Her caseload then ballooned to 360 after three judges retired, she said. She's making a lot of excuses. Maldonado said she worked hard to get the caseload down to a, quote, reasonable number, end quote. That's the first time in this article they actually quoted her. See, if somebody says something, they can give a whole quote from a human being. They gave a whole quote from Lindsey Graham. They gave a whole quote from Senator Kennedy. They gave two words from this judge. Why? Because I'd have to assume she didn't give a coherent answer much longer than two words. She's down to a, quote, reasonable number, end quote, and was also careful to ensure her decisions were, quote, well-reasoned, end quote. Now, well-reasoned is a hyphenate, so that's really only technically one word. Then at the end of this, we get to a big, long quote of six words, which is, quote, not sometimes the most rapid process, end quote. Whew. Hope she's all right after that one. Do they have a foot massage person sitting off to the side? That is, by the way, the extent to which she was quoted in this entire article about how there are more quotes about her. Dick Durbin, the most appropriately named man in the United States Senate, is quoted as saying a worthy line of questioning, quote, and that she was a, quote, good judge, end quote, and, quote, indication that you are careful and thoughtful and obviously up to the job, end quote. They spent more time quoting Dick Durbin than about the judge than they did quoting the judge. But she'll be the first Hispanic on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. So, I mean, what more could you possibly want from anybody, right? So now that we've explored this judge in written form. I swear to God, I've never seen a story about somebody, about their testimony, about that quotes them less than that. In my whole life, I've never seen it. There's probably less than two dozen words in quotation marks from the judge, from Judge Maldonado in that Reuters story. Dick Durbin gets more ink. Nothing. Well, those Republicans are badgering her. They grilled her. Sounds like two of them asked a couple of questions. Hey, you got a huge backlog here. What's the deal? Not, you've got a huge backlog here, woman, Hispanic woman. You therefore suck at your job and don't deserve anything else. Huh? Did it just seem? Now, at the very end, you get a little explanation. You get a little bit more from. There's a third Republican. You're like, oh my God, is this third Republican pouncing as well? Are they all pouncing? No. Reuters writes at the end, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah said he understood that there was a, quote, sort of hazing ritual among some judges to hand off old cases to new judges. Oh, well, that might help explain. Now, you would think that the judge could say, yeah, you know what, I've been on the job for about 20 minutes, and it's kind of a sort of tradition to bury the new person. But then that would lead to questions like, you've been on the job for 20 minutes, why the hell are you getting a promotion? What did you do that was so great? Shouldn't there be other people at the same level of the federal courts that you are who have been there longer, right? If you're the new kid on the block, and there, doesn't that mean that there are other people that could? And then you go, what makes you so special? And you have to go back to what Democrats obsess with. It's skin color, it's ethnicity, it's race. That's it. That's it. But that's not really the problem. Judge Maldonado was questioned by Senator Kennedy about a brief that she signed. Now, I am no lawyer, but I know that if, you know, it's a layman, if you put your name on something, that means that you have agreed to it. If you put your name on a court filing, whether or not you wrote it, you could have an intern do it. The Supreme Court, just to give you a fine example before we get to this, the justices, some of them write their own opinions, Some of them have clerks do it. The clerks do all the research and the backing up and the citings. They get all the things together. The judge might give directions. The justice might give directions. It's a lot like ghostwriting. The clerks do a lot of the ghostwriting. Then the justices, like Scalia and Thomas, Scalia wrote his own. You could tell they have their own unique style, and it doesn't change when the clerks change. That's not to say he did all of the research. The clerks did that. But the ghostwriters come in and they do the actual work, right? But once the justice signs on to it, once it's done, it doesn't matter who typed the keys, who punched in the individual letters, who proofread it, who did anything. Once it's done and released and signed off on by the judge and signed by the judge, it becomes the words of that justice. I have never seen a judge say, yeah, I ruled in this case on this way. We're in the minority, we're in the majority, whatever. And they go, well, why did you write this sentence here? And then the interviewer reads them a sentence, and the judge goes, I don't even know what that means. I don't remember that one. Maybe I was really drunk. Maybe it was late at night. Maybe I'd waited till the last minute, and I don't know. I didn't write it. Judges understand that once they put their name on it, it's theirs. That's why they are the last step in the editorial process, right? Clerks do the research. Well, the judge rules, the judge makes the decision, the judge then points the clerks in the right direction, here, go cite this, cite that, get the other thing. The clerks write up a draft, the judge, then the justice, then adds their special language to it, frames it in a way that they want, whatever it is, writes the thing. Then maybe it goes for copy editing. It maybe gets looked over by the clerks again to say, everybody understands this, clear, blah, blah, blah. It's one thing to have it make sense in your head. It's another thing to have it make sense on a page. So you make sure that is, but then it goes back to the judge once all the grammar's been checked and all the facts have been checked and everybody's in agreement with the argument, and the judge gives once last over and then signs it. This is it. Print this sucker up. We're good to go. Because the second that happens, the judge recognizes that it's not a clerk. You can complain about the clerk. Well, I didn't know the clerk. The clerk is the one who peppered this decision with the N-word. I didn't know. You signed off on it, all right? There were ample opportunities for you to check it, read it, disagree with it, whatever, change it. Once you sign it, it's yours. You own it. You bought it. Well, Judge Maldonado, when she was a lawyer, signed, this exchange is something to behold. She called for the banning of assault weapons in a filing with the court. And Judge and Senator Kennedy just wants her to know, what is an assault weapon? Like, what is it? You wrote this. She didn't. She says she didn't write it. Somebody else wrote it. She just signed it. But once you sign it, it becomes yours. Once you sign it and file it with the court, it's yours. You might as well. So you damn well better make sure you know what the hell you're signing and that you understand what they're talking about. And she says she had no idea. She just signed this. She didn't write it. It's the ultimate dodging of responsibility. And tell me, on what planet does somebody who could engage in this exchange deserve? Deserve is the word. That should be the only word that matters. Merit, deserve. And what planet does this person deserve a promotion if this is how they conduct themselves?
You said, quote, assault weapons may be banned because they're extraordinarily dangerous and are not appropriate for legitimate self-defense purposes, close quote. Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
Thank you, Senator Kennedy. Just to clarify, there, I was local counsel.
But you wrote the brief. Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
Senator Kennedy, actually, I did not write the brief. The brief was written by...
You signed the brief, though, didn't
correct.
You?
Correct. I signed the brief.
You sign a brief, you're testifying to the court that everything in it is true, right?
Yes. Okay. That and I
so they're your words in terms of the court, right?
Well, you're correct, Senator Kennedy. Okay. I would never
tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
So I am not a gun expert, and at the time, that brief, I think, was about 10 years...
But you were given the court advice about, say, ban assault weapons. What is... You told the court you were an expert. Just tell me what you wanted to ban.
Senator, sitting here today, as I said, I did not write that brief. I was local counsel.
Sign the brief.
I understand. At the time...
Tell me what you wanted to ban. That's all I want to know, Judge.
I don't remember the exact definition of assault weapons in the ordinance that was at issue.
So you submitted a brief to the an appellate brief, you signed it, and you don't know what, and you said abolish assault weapons, and you don't know what you wanted them to abolish?
Senator, at the time that I signed the brief, I read the brief. Because our Supreme Court required someone, an Illinois bar member, to sign the brief. I was not responsible for researching the content.
You were responsible for the brief.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sitting here today, I do not remember the characteristics of that were cited in the ordinance for the assault weapons ban. It's not an area of practice that I have specialized in. I'm sure... 10 years ago, I could have answered your question.
And
it's sitting here today.
You think you deserve to be promoted?
You think you deserve to be promoted? What's an assault? If you ever want to stump any leftist when they're talking about gun control, we need to ban assault weapons. Does anybody need an assault weapon? We need to ban assault weapons. Just ask them, what's an assault weapon? What's an assault weapon? They won't have an answer, but they all speak in declarative terms that they've got to go. They have to go. It is wildly important. They have no legitimate purpose, these assault weapons. You can't hunt with an assault weapon. What's an assault weapon? If Sylvester Stallone ever used it in a movie or anything that looked like it in a movie, then it's an assault weapon. If Arnold Schwarzenegger or Bruce Willis ever used anything similar to... So, rifle. You think bolt-action rifle. You can, well, rather go back to flintlock, because that's what the Founding Fathers had when they wrote the Second Amendment. Yes, it is. But... they could envision a world where there was more rapid-fire weaponry. There were, you know, a couple of firing weapons out there. It certainly wasn't a pistol. It wasn't a revolver. But there were ways to... they were seeing advances in firearms technology, right? They were. They just were. And, well, no, that's not... So, okay, then the Second Amendment only applies... to firearms that were available in 1789. Is that what you're telling me? Is that how? Well, that's the way it should be. Okay, well, then let's do that same thing to the First Amendment, right? What? Well, no. You don't get free speech on television. There's while you could imagine a firearm with more than one round in it, in the late 18th century, there's no way on earth you could have really envisioned television, radio, internet, right? So are you saying that the First Amendment didn't apply to those? And then let's talk about religions that were, well, they'd probably be fine with banning religions that were not around then or even prevalent in the United States. Now, maybe not that last part. But they would have a problem with it. Well, the press, freedom of the press, that only applies to newspapers. Doesn't apply to reporters on television or radio, people who operate websites. Again, there's no way the Founding Fathers, there wasn't even anything close. You couldn't see the horizon of something like that off in the distance. So there's no way that would apply. No, well, that's different. No, the right of freedom of the press is absolute. It's weird. Why, as long as they're leftists, You get a conservative website, conservative news site. No, 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 no. That's different. It's different. Absolute freedom of the liberal press. Second Amendment, restrictions, 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 restrictions on Americans' rights. And it's because of this mentality. Nancy Maldonado sitting there going, I don't know what an assault weapon is, but you've called for the banning of them. I promise you, there is nobody who's called for the banning of so-called assault weapons who could define you what an assault weapon is. Remember? Because it's all aesthetics, first of all, and they don't know the components, names. But it really is. Who was it? It might have been the Brady Group. It might have been Every Mom or something. All these left-wing groups that get billions of dollars in funding, they were putting out different graphics of dangerous weapons that they wanted banned and different attachments to an AR-15 that could make an AR-15 more deadly, more like a grenade launcher. Yeah, you could theoretically attach a grenade launcher to a broomstick if you really wanted to, but you can't buy a grenade, right? And one of the things they had was a chainsaw bayonet. Like, okay, what if it's the zombie apocalypse, I want a chainsaw bayonet. Because apparently I watched The Walking Dead and this new thing with Rick and Michonne. I'm watching that. And everybody's just the dumbest, deafest person on the face of the earth. These monsters, these zombies, constantly. But somehow nobody recognizes that this slow-moving creature is snarling and growling for 20 minutes as it may. Suddenly it's just on them. Well, a chainsaw bayonet would come in real handy there, wouldn't it? You'd just be able to chop their heads off or whatever. It's... You want to ban what you don't know, right? And that they always say it's ignorance. You're just afraid of you're afraid of this. You're afraid of that. And that's why you don't like this. No, no, no. I'm fully aware of certain things. And that's why I don't like them. And that's why I don't like them. I've tried them. I've seen them. I've tasted them. I've smelled them. I've hung out with them. I've done whatever it is. And I'm like, meh, not for me. Not interested. But when it comes to the Second Amendment, when it comes to firearms, when it comes to your ability to protect yourself or your family, the left wants no part of it for themselves. And you don't have to. That's the thing about our constitutionally protected rights. You don't have to exercise them. You have the right to free speech, but you also cannot be compelled to speak, right? You can take an oath of silence. You can be as quiet as you want to be. You do not have to bear witness against yourself. You can sit there and not speak to the rest of your life if you want to. What you can't do is shut everybody else up. Shut anybody else up, except maybe your kids. Yet when it comes to the Second Amendment, the left looks at it as their birthright, as their purpose in life. They don't want to exercise their Second Amendment, and that's fine. You do not have to own firearms. You don't have to. You have the right to. You don't have to petition your government for a redress of grievances. You don't have to practice a religion. You don't have to do any number of things, but you have the right to, should you so choose. But when it comes to the Second Amendment, the left isn't content with that. When it comes to anything, the left isn't content with that. It's the essence of progressivism. They are overflowing with a compulsion to tell you what to do, to force you to do something. And it comes to firearms, they don't want you to have it because they don't like them. They don't know them. They couldn't tell you the first thing about them. Most of them have probably never been to a range and fired any of them. But they don't like them. That's enough. And therefore, you can't have them. It's a perversion. It's a delusion. It's a special kind of evil. There's something wrong with people fundamentally who look at this. I don't know what it is, but I want to ban it. I need to get rid of it. I don't want it in my house. Okay, great. You don't have to have it in your house. And I don't want it in your house either. Well, who the hell are you to tell me what I can and can't have in my house? It's dangerous. Most weapons that are used in crimes, first of all, most weapons that are used for murder are handguns, if you're going to use a gun. Second, they are illegally obtained, stolen, bought illegally, whatever it is. The legal licensed, law-abiding gun owner rarely commits a crime. They often protect themselves, though. That must be what Democrats really don't like. They want you government dependent in every possible way, including and up to your life depending on it. Because then they got you. In other news out there, where do we want to go? Let's go back. Let's talk about the left and their obsession with Donald Trump and their hypocrisy. Mara Gay, you probably don't know who Mara Gay is because you're a normal human being going about your daily life, right? You just are. And there's no reason for you to know who Mara Gay is. And even people who know who Mara Gay is, most of them sit there and go, why do I know who Mara Gay? Why can I forget Mara Gay? Please, can something come? Somebody invent a pill that will wipe my memory of Mara Gay from my head. And that's because Mara Gay is a member of the editorial board of the New York Times. She's not a particularly bright person. If I remember correctly, and I usually do, she came to prominence when she talked about how much money Michael Bloomberg had spent on his presidential campaign in 2016, 2020, whenever it was. And like he could have given everybody in the country $1 billion or something. It's just like unbelievably stupid at math. But she's an MSNBC contributor because, of course, she is. She is a member of the New York Times editorial board. If you notice one thing about media, it is wildly incestuous. They'll sit there and they'll make "where you bury your sister" jokes about anybody who lives, I don't know, more than an hour's drive from the ocean. They're all hicks and stupid. Oh, my God, can you believe how stupid they are? But they are really, truly, genuinely incestuous. Not that they're having relations with family, although, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me. When you show up at the same key party and somebody draws from the fishbowl, you know, it's just because they drew a BMW. There's no way out of it. There's no swapping, no backsies. But incestuous in the sense of similar. These people all might as well be related. The whole crew at Morning Joe might as well just be one big mountain family engaging in an orgy. That's what they do verbally every single day. This morning was no different, as Mara Gay warns about Donald Trump. I can't imagine if I hated something. I don't know, what do I dislike? Coffee, right? I don't like coffee. Although I do like the smell, but I don't like coffee. But if I had to come here every single day and talk for an hour about coffee, or nobody listens. If it ain't coffee, I ain't listening. So I'm like, okay, I got to talk coffee. I would go insane. I would not do it. It's not Mara Gay's job. It's one of her side hustles. Probably pays her, I don't know, it's New York. She's a woman of color. She's associated with the New York Times. MSNBC probably throws her $200,000 a year for a once a week appearance on MSNBC to go on and talk about how oppressed she is. You know, what that we're all so oppressed. I mean, I guess combat pay. If you got to sit net close to Joe and Mika, you probably deserve more, honestly. But that's beside the point. But it would get really old really fast. Wouldn't you just hate it? Like, God, I got to go and talk about coffee again today. Like, coffee. I hate coffee. And you got to pretend that, like, coffee matters. Coffee is important. Coffee is, you know, the most pressing, important issue of the day. You must talk about coffee. And you're sitting there going, my God, I hate coffee. You'd quit, wouldn't you? You'd find something. You'd at least call in sick a lot and make demands like, if I'll come back, but I never want to talk about coffee again. Or let me mix it up and throw some hot chocolate talk in there every once in a while. How about some tea? Something, please, for the love of God. But Morning Joe is all Donald Trump. Donald Trump lives rent-free in these people's heads. Now, granted, it's spacious. Probably a lot less gilded than Donald Trump is used to. But as far as the square footage goes, in the areas behind their soulless eyes and their ears that don't seem to work, is nothing but an echo chamber, literally and figuratively. So they talk about him constantly. And they talk about him as though every word they say related to him is the first time those words, those thoughts have occurred, or the first time anybody did anything remotely close to what Donald Trump is accused of doing, or however you want to look at it. Like, Donald Trump exists in a snow globe where nothing else occurs. History didn't happen. The present isn't going on. What they do and say doesn't matter. The second it leaves their mouth, forget what they said yesterday. What they said the second it leaves their mouth no longer applies if they don't need it to apply. It's a bizarre sort of eternal sunshine of the spotless mind kind of thing, that they're creating new memories while simultaneously their old memories are being wiped out. Except their old memories are on tape. And everybody, not everybody, because I don't think that the people watching remember, but most people should remember what's going on here. They recognize, wait a second, this is hypocritical. Or, hey, you're accusing Donald Trump of doing something Joe Biden is doing. Or you're doing something, you know, you just excused Democrats doing this last week, and now you're saying it's horrible, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of messaging, engaging in fascism, under the banner of anti-fascism. We're opposed to fascism. That's why we have to round up our enemies and imprison them and execute them. Seems a little weird. We have to kick people off the ballot in order to save democracy. We can't have people having the choice to vote for somebody that they want, that they like. That's a threat to democracy. It's just that level of bizarre. That's what you hear in all of these clips from Morning Joe. We start with the New York Times editorial board member, Mara Gay. And Donald Trump is guilty. Donald Trump, you got to go after him. Not so much concerned about others.
You know, if he was to be reelected president, I mean, you can be pardoned. You can pardon yourself for federal crimes. You can't actually do that for state crimes.
Right.
So that's one feature to consider. I mean, I do believe that I hear you, but I think that the larger risk is actually in allowing Donald Trump to continue his ongoing impunity that he has enjoyed for too many decades. And, you know, anybody else in the United States, if they committed crimes, which he may have done, or if he committed civil fraud, as inflating the cost of his real estate assets, anybody else would be prosecuted for that.
Right.
Anybody else would be held accountable. And so, yes, it is true that New York is now a solidly Democratic state. Wasn't always. But at the same time, he spent decades here not paying taxes. He spent decades not being held accountable while people all across New York City were evicted for not paying $800 in rent.
Right.
So I actually think that there's every reason to go after anybody who has potentially committed crimes. And, you know, afterwards, he has every right to appeal as well, just like any other American. So I say let the legal system play out. And, you know, it's hard to have sympathy because after his braggadocious behavior for all of these years,
right.
You know.
But Mara Gay went on to talk about Donald Trump. Everybody knows Donald Trump is history's greatest monster. It's different when Donald Trump does it. Why is it different than when Donald Trump does it? That's a question for the ages for Democrats. Why is it different? If Donald Trump is doing what Joe Biden is doing, if Donald Trump is saying what you said last week, why is it different when it comes to, why is it fascism? Why does he deserve to be prosecuted? Why is the presumption of innocence crucial to, say, a Hunter Biden, but not relevant at all when it comes to Donald Trump? What Donald Trump is accused of doing in a criminal way is nothing, quite frankly, relative to what Hunter Biden didn't pay taxes. Hunter Biden did all sorts of, but Hunter Biden is a huge, huge problem. the President of the United States possibly selling access and influence peddling for money to make his family. That's a big problem. You can also say, look, I don't really care what Donald Trump did. It's a big problem. But, you know, what Joe Biden is accused of doing, it's also a problem. I'd like to get to the bottom of both of them. One has been investigated ad nauseum. It seemingly come up empty. It's an insurrection. Nobody's charged him with insurrection. Why has nobody charged him with insurrection? Because the people who could charge him with insurrection know that he did not commit insurrection. But they can just say, well, he's an insurrectionist. We have to take him off the ballot because he committed insurrection. He's the only person to be guilty by decree, and not by a court of decree or a government decree, but by some worthless piece of garbage in a studio at 30 Rock going, I think he committed, I know he committed insurrection. Mika wakes up, insurrection. And suddenly it is so. But Joe Biden, they said, we demand evidence. We need evidence. We must know. What proof do you have? Do you have video? Do you have a check within the subject line where it says to Joe Biden for influence peddling? You don't have that, then you don't have anything. Just that they gave him $500,000 could mean anything. Maybe they liked the cut of his jib. You don't know why they gave him $500,000. Don't pretend to know. It's enough to make you sick. It's enough to be disgusted by. But if history begins anew every day, you wake up going, oh, well, it's wonderful. I didn't do that. A normal human being would need a Silkwood shower after the level of just BS that these people have to marinate in order to exist the way they do. But they have no problem with it. You know why? Because every little thing they do that causes a normal human being, a decent human being, to recoil in horror, going, oh my God, I wouldn't do that, adds another zero to their check, adds another year to their contract, adds more money to them. You roll in circles with people who are also equally covered in that same manure smell. After a while, you don't even notice it anymore. So now that you've got the mojo crowd, Mara Gay is very upset that Donald Trump, and then everybody around the table is very upset about Donald Trump. Along comes Mika to talk about how Donald Trump is a fascist. Now, this is a longer clip than just that. I just want to point out, Mika cites history in 1939. You want to talk about history starting over? Forget about history starting every day. She talks about history in 1939 as far as fascism in Germany, which everybody who has a brain cell knows that the Nazis came to power in 1933. So it's unbelievable that she would then say this, but it goes on. It's just a minor part of what she says and is said here. But I just find it humorous that she's trying to sound intelligent. And she's trying, God bless her heart, she's trying so hard to sound intelligent. It's just not there. She just doesn't have it in her. And so she says 1939. While talking about learning lessons from history, she gets history all wrong. That's the irony of it. But then the rest of the gang at Mojo doesn't really give a damn. It's Trump's fascist, and they're talking about Israel, et cetera, et cetera. They just toss it all together in a bouillabaisse kind of mess and go about their business.
Hateful, offensive, deeply disturbing. Listen, it's time, and it's not hyperbole, it's not exaggeration, but I would say that it's time to start looking at Donald Trump for the danger that he is, and looking at the history from 1939 to the present of how it happens. Jonathan Lemire, if you read books on fascism and dictatorships and how it happens, there are through lines that are happening here in America. And the choice is very real. And for people who like democracy, this is a frightening moment.
Yeah, there are some dark, ominous parallels here, that the language that Trump uses and is then parroted by his supporters. It is, as Senator Schumer said, deeply offensive. The people you can support the state of Israel and yet have disagreements with it. You can support the state of Israel and be a Democrat. You don't have to be a Republican. And Sam Stein, it's sort of the usual collection of responses from Trump's fellow members of the GOP. Someone like Senator Mitt Romney forcefully condemns it, as he always does. Good for him. A few others have been pretty good on stuff like this. Senator Cassidy is willing to break with him from time to time. But others do the routine of, oh, I haven't seen it. Oh, I can't comment on it. And others just simply back him up and agree with what is deeply offensive, not just for Jewish people, but for anyone who loves democracy.
It's deeply offensive for anybody who loves democracy to say that you don't really care too much about Israel if you're supporting Democrats who have a giant swath of their public, their population, their voting base, hating Israel and calling for the genocide of Jews. It's deeply, deeply, not that calling for genocide against the Jews, but the idea that you would say that maybe you'd question the loyalty, and maybe you'd question the commitment to Israel of somebody who stands next to somebody who calls for the extermination of Israel. It's very, very disturbing. Every once in a while, there's a Republican that calls him out, but other people are sitting there going, I want to know what he said before I comment on it. How dare anybody do that? Every Republican is responsible for everything any Republican says. No Democrat is responsible for even the things they say. Chuck Schumer, time now, you heard the administration, is time now for a ceasefire. A ceasefire. An immediate ceasefire. And a release of the hostages. Well, wait a second. If the ceasefire is immediate, why isn't there an immediate... See, if you want a ceasefire, you'd have a moral argument. I realize talking morals with a party of child genital mutilation is a slippery slope here, but if you want to make a moral argument for a ceasefire, you need to claim some sort of high ground there. And it's not the situation, like I say, in politics where the high ground just gives you a nice unobstructed view of your defeat. In a moral high ground sense, it makes sense. If you're going to call for a ceasefire, if you want Israel, stop killing these sweet, innocent terrorists. Stop it. Stop it. Then you should probably get the 200 or so hostages released that they're still holding, the ones that they haven't killed yet. They are killing them. And the five Americans should at a minimum be a mention to the gang over at Morning Joe. But again, they don't care. They went to Israel. They're probably not Morning Joe watchers, not MSNBC viewers. They don't. And besides, you can't make utopia without breaking a few eggs. So what are you going to do? But instead, they're saying we need an immediate ceasefire now, and we need the release of the hostages. Again, a rational person would say release the hostages, and then you have a moral case to demand an immediate ceasefire. But the hostages would have to be a priority. You would have to recognize and admit and be willing to stand on principle on the idea that Israel is justified in its response to the attacks of October the 7th. And if you want even the possibility of a ceasefire, because if Israel has in fact inflicted a lot of damage on Hamas and good, it's destroyed a lot of Gaza, Hamas doesn't care. A normal rational organization would be begging for peace, would be begging for mercy, but they still have civilians and children to wrap themselves with, so they don't really care about that. It's good in the propaganda war, and besides, the leaders of Hamas live in Qatar in five-star hotels. What do they care? But no, you would think Americans would say the hostages, especially the American hostages, but don't give us the American hostages. Just if you release the five Americans, that's great. We want them released. But we want all of them released, so we won't stop and we won't change our position at all unless and until all the hostages are released. We're not doing that. Instead, we're getting lectures from airheaded bleach blondes about fascism that are historically inaccurate and lessons from White House correspondents or whatever the hell Jonathan Lemaire is over there. I forget what he is at MSNBC about how Republicans won't denounce Donald Trump for saying that the people who are demanding an immediate ceasefire without condition and support the idea of from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, are somehow maybe you don't really like, I beat the hell out of my wife. I cheat on her left and right. I do this, and but I love her. Nobody's going to question my love for her. No, that's not how it works, Senator Kennedy. Or at least not how it should work. Words are great. Actions matter, too. And if the two don't jibe, there's going to be some questions. Democrats won't, not that they can't, they won't denounce their rabid anti-Semitic flank. But pointing out how the Democratic Party, see, silence is violence, silence is acquiescence, silence is complicity, whatever you want to call it, whatever they say when they say it about other people, apply that to them, and they're like, this is an outrage. How dare anybody say that? Just because we tolerate people calling for the genocide of the Jews doesn't mean we support genocide for the Jews. Or that you should be pointing out that we support genocide for the Jews. They hate it. As much as a cockroach hates the kitchen light being turned on when it's in the middle of the floor, these people hate the same thing metaphorically when you point out what they do or what they say. So now we've got, let's see, we'll do one more cut of Morning Joe and their no labels, because they're very upset. Now, the important thing to remember in this clip, when you hear the Morning Joe gang, is these are the people who are talking about threats to democracy. These are the people who are screaming about threats to democracy. An organization, now they don't even have a candidate, they don't have a platform, they have ballot access, but that's it. But what's good is that if you don't have a name to put on it? But they want to give voters choices. They're not happy with Donald Trump. They're certainly no fans of Donald Trump, but they're also not fans of Joe Biden. There are a lot of disaffected Democrats who see how far left he's going. They're not going to tell you that. Because the idea is that Republicans have moved so far to the right. The Republicans are moved so far to the right that they're unrecognizable. It's not your father's Republican Party. Meanwhile, there's genital mutilation. There's open borders. There's throwing veterans out of shelters to make room for illegal aliens, et cetera, et cetera. And you're like, is that your grandfather's Democratic Party? They can't acknowledge that. They can't acknowledge that there are a bunch of Democrats who are alienated by what Joe Biden and the modern Democratic Party has become. So they just pretend that these people don't exist, that it's all about hurting Donald Trump. They don't have a problem with, if they didn't have a problem with Joe Biden, there would be no reason to exist for the no labels party or whatever to exist. There wouldn't be. They've got to, I don't like Republicans. I love the Democrats. I love Joe Biden. That's why I'm starting a competing organization. Does that make sense to anybody? No, of course it doesn't make any sense to anybody, but you don't have to make sense to anybody when you're on Morning Joe. So they are mad that this group is sitting there because it could take votes away from it. And realistically, it could, depending on who they nominate. And the more votes they take away from Joe Biden, the more of an acknowledgement there is, if you're being honest, and that's a stretch for these people, and that's why they're not honest, but the more the acknowledgement is that the Democratic Party has become something that is unrecognizable to people who were Democrats 10 and 20 years ago. Ronald Reagan famously said, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. That was when they were just starting to flirt with socialism and communism. Now they are full bore into it. So there'd be a whole lot of Democrats out there who don't get it. But listen to this discussion and how mad they are that this group exists.
What's the purpose of no labels if I'd heard all along the purpose was to defeat Donald Trump? But they're just not in that space anymore. They just aren't. I mean, things are cut up, the more it helps Donald Trump. And they have to know that.
No labels has now turned into no idea why they are there. I mean, because they can't find a candidate, and they seemingly have not been able to coalesce around a message, all of which helps Donald Trump. At some point, you have to ask yourself, is there a distraction? So some of us in my life, I've run for office to
right.
try to advance a point, wanted to be in the debates.
Right.
But they're not trying to do any of that. They're not leveraging anything. They're not trying to bring a different kind of policy to the forefront. So what is this really about?
What is this really about? The Right Reverend Al Sharpton sitting there. They're very confused. They can't fathom a world where anybody would dissent from. Now, these are Democrats, right? These are, Joe Lieberman is a part of this. Mark Penn, who was Hillary Clinton's pollster, I think he's a part of this. There's a lot of people who are old school Democrats who are a part of the No Labels group. Why would they start a No Labels group? See, they wanted it to be a third party that hurt Donald Trump. They wanted somebody to come in and be like, hey, we're gonna do Mitt Romney or something. Let's get him out, or Larry Hogan, God forbid. Let's get somebody out there who will take away votes from Donald Trump. And what they're really doing is saying, let's get somebody sane on the ballot. Because they're Democrats. They don't want to put a Republican up there, even a Republican light. They want a Democrat. And so they've been floating names around. And I go, no, this could, don't you understand that unless you do something that hurts Donald Trump, you're helping Donald Trump? You can't do that. They think it's a mistake. They think these people are stupid. Instead, they're just going, we're not down with conservatism. And we're not down with this rabid leftist anti-American crap either. We're going to put somebody up there who's pro-American. Now, there's no concern really about No Labels from the Trump campaign. Like, oh, my God, they're going to put somebody who's pro-American up. No, because they recognize that people who are genuinely pro-American, you got their voting Republican. But there's some other people who just will never vote Republican. They're looking for a home. Democrats recognize that those people might have found a home reluctantly voting for Joe Biden because they just want, they can't vote for a Republican. But if you give them an alternative, a viable alternative on the ballot, a recognizable name, that will hurt Joe Biden. They're not talking about out progressiving Joe Biden. They're not talking about the Democrats hate Israel. We really hate Israel. Democrats want open borders. We want to get rid of borders completely. We want to... No, that's not it. This is a party that would say, hey, we need to control what's going on in the border. That's why they hate Robert Kennedy so much. He's saying we can't have this free flow of people. Robert Kennedy is a committed leftist, but on like two issues, he's not a total down-the-line progressive. Like, oh, it's a threat. It's a threat. He's going to suck votes away from Joe Biden. Well, that's because Joe Biden sucks, right? That's why... There are a lot of Democrats looking for an alternative to Joe Biden because Joe Biden is so terrible. Them possibly finding one scares the ever-loving crap out of Democrats. That should tell you all you need to know. All right, that is about enough for today. I say you can get about your weekend. You know you want to. You've just been waiting for this moment. Anyway, don't forget to go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Or DerekHunter.locals.com. Sign up, support the show, enter to win the autographed copy of Donald Trump Jr.'s book, Liberal Privilege. Let's just say 3 o'clock on Monday. You got until then to sign up. But you should sign up now so you get the weekend FM review right at 12:01 Eastern Time. There are people out there, crazy as it may seem, who don't go to bed Friday night until they listened to it. They're out in California. It's not like they're staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning or anything. But they do it. They do it, and I appreciate it. But, for the love of them, for them, to find out what's driven them to this point of insanity. Or is it sanity itself? Sign up. $5. Check it out. Give it a month. You never know. It's a very low carb. You're going to lose weight. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'll see you hopefully at midnight.